I don't know if I want to reclaim home.
Anyway,
so we'll just figure it out. And we'll just have the, what I'm planning to have a comprehensive multiple choice final. Then maybe an assignment due that week.
So we'll see how that goes. We're gonna plan it by ear.
Okay, I got my water heightened loop here from the storms outside that I thought I'd show today. Since everybody had to put up with the rain and precipitation, at least it's not snow, right?
Yeah,
don't jinx it. Don't jinx it, huh? So I got a 6-hour loop here with the violets and the greens with the high refractivity here. And you can see there's a low pressure probably that this is wrapping around. And looks like Fargo got some more heavy rain and then a little bit with the green. So, you know, about 30 dBz refractivity is indicating that there's probably rain on the ground. So, big areas of ripe rain there to get us started with. Any questions? We should look at the radar data all the time.
Could that vertical motion partially replace the heat of Fargo?
The cities Well, maybe some, because they did look at, you know, urban effects. And there's two urban effects for cities. There's one is that you're changing the land cover. And the second one is you're changing the aerosols that are there. And so they both can have an influence. So you can look at stuff when they reduced aerosols due to the Clean Air Act and stuff downwinds of cities. That seemed to have an effect on the precipitation in terms of a climatology. But the urban heating of the surface is a big effect. And typically that, I think the prevariance is that's more dominant than the aerosol effects. So, but that being said, Fargo is a little bit small and, you know, with a big crowd cover. So it might enhance it a little bit. But I don't think anybody did a study exactly on Fargo. So, and sometimes it's a little bit downwind too, that they take some time. It's like when you do the crowd scene, it takes time for it to affect it. But that's a good question. Any other questions? Radar, meteorology, mine. Okay, let's see here. I'm trying to get the... I did this. We'll talk about the exam on Thursday, since a few people weren't here last week and have to take it. And so we'll talk that on Thursday. And today I'm going to talk about, we talked about fog abatement last week. On Tuesday, now I'm going to talk about lightning suppression, hurricane modification. And then I put the topics for the rest of the kind of the semester. At least a tentative plan for what they are. However, I'm not sure I can do two a day on each one of these. So, and then I also want to talk a little bit more about the actual radar and some projects, because I have all the radar data from Bowman that I want to show you guys and some selected cases. And then on the 21st, we have Dan Brothers from the North Dakota project is going to come out, talk about record keeping and their system for that. And remember how important that is, because that's one of the federal requirements for weather modification. So so basically a couple more of these, and then we'll get into how you dispense the materials and then how you actually do the operations in terms of using radars, forecasting, of them. So we'll do that. And I have quite a few videos now I posted up on. So I have this nice link here. If you got nothing else to do, if you get watching TV, you should just go through and watch all these cool videos. Let's see if I can pull this one up. We're going to talk about lightning today. And see if I can agree. So this is a link to a pretty recent animation of a lightning flash recorded by a radio telescope network. Each of the dots is a radio source. So when you have lightning, it has a big emission of the electromagnetic waves that you can pick up in the radio frequency range. And so this is a huge, chain of flashes that extends over huge area, like many states. I guess it's not that big. Flash. Okay, I'm not saying it's that big. It's
5 kilometers.
5 kilometers, yeah. But it shows you the, I don't know, this the kind of the nature of how these grow and evolve in terms of once you get the lightning to take off, it moves in kind of a random growth-like fashion. So that's a good introduction to our topic today, which is lightning suppression. Hey, there we go. So here's my picture of it. 5 kilometer wide, yep, there I have it. And so we're gonna talk about lightning and lightning suppression. So, starting, what is lightning? Full electricity in the air. So, it's just like the electricity used to run our lights. Well, not exactly because it's not alternating current. But, so, normally the air is not a conductor. So, you don't have electricity or electrons or charges to be able to move through the air. However, if the electric field is large enough, the electrons, negatively charged, can pull away from nuclei of molecules and become a conductive medium. So what this means is you have, the basic thing about science you should always know is everything's made of atoms with the positive charge in the middle and the electrons orbiting on the outside. So you can change and pull these electrons away from the atoms and create an electric field. So that's the starting point, an electric field is a force for that. And the electric field forces is huge compared to the gravitational force. Okay, so basic physics, well. So if you're gonna have, lightning, when you conduct electricity, you have to cause the electric breakdown of the air, changing the air from a non-conductive to a conductor. And for this to happen, there's a field strength of about 3 × 10⁶ volts per meter. So volts is a potential, and how much potential do you have per per length. And so if you have water droplets, this can be reduced to 1 × 10⁶. And then we have a big number here. It doesn't really work out well because we're using kind of volts and meters, which are your basic measurements. So a lot of times you talk in terms of kilovolts. So, or megavolts. So what's really interesting, I won't go into too much of the details, but we've been studying this, this electric field we actually have on the citation for the first time when I was did my CAPEX project in Florida. We put electric field mills on there. These are instruments on the aircraft that can measure the electric field. And so when we fire one of the thunderstorms, we can actually get a measurement of what the electric field is. They also have these on the ground a lot of times, you can measure them. But there is a fair weather electric field from the ionosphere down to the Earth's surface. Okay, and so on the Earth's surface, it's conductive, all the electrons are there. And so this is one reason we call the Earth's surface a ground, is we have all these electrons in there. It's an infinite source of electrons. So that's what a ground is, right? So you can always pull electrons out of there. So, but you need a counterbalancing ionosphere source. So about 50 kilometers up, there's a positive one. So, and if you have this theoretical field, I'm wondering where, maybe I repeat myself. The idea is that you have to get this potential, but you can keep building up this charge. So the to not build up the charge, do you know what is the mechanism to transfer charge between the two? It's the thunderstorms, yeah. So because we got to discharge that. And since these are conductive, it's all the same all across the planet. So this electric field has to stabilize, and you can actually see it's one of the phenomenons that is synchronous all across the planet. So at the same time every day, you actually have a change in the fair weather electric field. It has to do with it goes up and down by the number of storms that occur in the diurnal day-night cycle. So charge distribution in a thunderstorm. So typically this is your typical charge distribution. Thanks to Noah for this nice little effect here. And so you have the negative charge for the fair weather, but underneath the storms, you get this positive charge near the ground, near the bottom of the storms, with a negative charge and the positive charge. So, every time this works a little different. So, and you can, I'll just say, maybe I skip over my next one. You can have different charges in the thunderstorm. You can have the, or what we call distribution in the storms. You can have negative over positive, positive over negative, or what this is your more typical positive negative with a word of positive on the bottom. So the charge on the bottom is less, which is summarized by the number of thrust signs with lots of positive charge up higher. So I have to make my, I'm gonna skip the next one because I like how I gotta fix my graphics. So how do you get charge separation? What causes charge to separate? And this is hard to understand the process because it's very quick. It's somewhat difficult to measure and it doesn't occur very much. So there are a number of theories and they've studied this for quite a while, but it's not a not a solved problem. And we probably have a combination of a bunch of theories. So we'll talk about two of them, convection and thermoelectric effects on this. So convection is your thunderstorms. We need to separate the charge for the electric fields. So there are a number of free ions. Ions are like positive charge. Yes.
You're referring to the charge separation. You're talking about how the top field or positive charge.
Yeah, either in a charge or in a, basically you need clouds to do this and ice in the clouds. So charge separation is when you don't have neutral charge. You have to have an area of positive charge and an area of negative. So that's where you separate the charges, you know? So, and it's kind of hard to think about this because if you have plus and minus, they should go together and cancel each other out, okay? So it's hard to get this charge to be separate because they want to be together, okay? So how do you do this? Because that's what you really need to form the strong electric field, because if you have that charge separation, you get a big electric field, and then you can have the breakdown through cards, the lightning and the current to flow. So, you know, how do we separate, how do we get these clouds with different charges in them? I'm showing you how they kind of typically are, but how does this happen? Is the question, and what's the mechanism? Because we really have to understand, you know, with all these modification techniques, we try to go and understand the physical principle of what's happening so that then we can figure out how we can change it, how we can modify it. If we don't understand, it's kind of hard to put a technique into a context. Free ions are either plus or minus charge in the air, and they usually come from cosmic rays that come into the atmosphere. So, someone want to explain what a cosmic ray is?
Sunlight.
Huh? Sunlight. Yeah. It's light, it's electromagnetic energy. It's just very high electromagnetic energy. I'm trying to think, a lot of times I think the very highest cosmic ray sources, at least I think, are not from the sun. There's extra, is that right?
Yeah.
So they're very high energy though, and that's the important thing. And they rain down on the atmosphere. So, and they can strike molecules. As they go through, they can intercept these molecules in the atmosphere. They have these, a lot of times the astronomers, they have to shield the detectors and stuff in deep caverns and stuff to get away from all these cosmic rays. But they are high enough energy that they can break the electrons loose from atoms, forming positive and negative charge. So there's a lot of charge all around. So there's a lot of charge that gets current, but then the point is how they should just recombine. So this is what's is given here. You can have this electric field come in, and you can get a current with this fair weather electric field, but that current is from positive to negative. And there's one that forms in the fair weather that comes down and the other one goes back up. So you have to complete the circuit. Okay, you can't. So that's why this fair and crowdy conditions that occur to keep this imbalance of the charges to occur to keep a big potential voltage difference between the ionosphere and the Earth's surface. So, but it's not a lot of current that flows, except for when you have big lightning discharges. So that's the source of the ions. So the ions make and separate the charges. And then the other thing I don't have here, but a important thing is when the charge is on a small ion that's very small, usually ions are electrons, free electrons, or maybe a single hydrogen atom that's positively charged. They're pretty small. And then they're very mobile. They move around a lot. Once they get on the aerosols, they're bigger, they're less mobile. And then once they get into clouds, droplets, and water, they get even less and less mobile. So the mobility, how fast they move and how fast they can recombine depends on the size of what they're attached to. So you can have anything can be positive and negatively charged. So, but that's how you get the fair weather electric field that you can measure. You can put out, measure what the electric field is on the Earth's surface. And you can measure this over time. People have done this. So if you get this ions in the atmosphere on this ferroelectric field, you could get this upward motion that gets carried in a convective cell. Under ferroelectric, you get a lot of these positive charges near the surface that could get carried up in the updrafts. And and then we'll go on to what happens once it rises up into the cloud. So as the cloud continues to grow, it develops an inner core of positive charge and an outer core of negative charge one. So if you kind of get this positive charge that gets in the upper part of the cloud, and it can attract and the negative charges to the outside. Okay, so remember, if this charge gets into the cloud droplets, then it can last a little bit longer. It gets originally created by the cosmic rays. So you can have this. The outer parts tend to move downward because that's where you have your entrainment, where you have the big updrafts in the middle. So they tend to rise to get this. So the end result is an accumulation of negative charges near the base and the positive charges up in the upper part of the cloud. So that's one way, and then you can get a negative, you know, you can have this positive charges kind of coming in too. Well, so it depends. You have the, you know, plus minus, and then maybe a little bit more positive on the bottom. And it takes a longer in the clouds for it to disappear, to dissipate, because it gets attracted onto the hydrometeors. So Thermoelectric effect in ice. So once you get these particles, one of the things that you have to have then for the lightning, you get the ice forming in the clouds. So if you ever see lightning, that's always an indication that there's ice in the clouds. So we look at what the water molecules and the ice tended to do, and that's to dissociate into positive and negative ions. So usually, you know, water is H2O, you can have plus H and minus OH. So the positive ions have greater mobility than the negative ones. So remember I said that positive, the mobility, so I'm using another term here, mobility. That's how much they can move around. You know, so if they're on a lighter substance, like hydrogen, it's very light, so it's very mobile. Okay, think of more mass, it gets less and less mobile. Okay, so the OH is less mobile than the positive ones. And it's by a factor of 10. So this, look at the mass of the two. Tells you something about the mobility. And then this, then it also depends on temperature. Higher the temperature, the greater the dissociation. So if you get this hot temperature, you get less dissociation. So this is one reason why at warmer temperatures where you have ice, you can get higher electric fields. And it gets colder, you have less mobility, less of it. The main thing is you get this dissociation of the positive and negative charges on the ice board. So net result. So we look at the temperature gradient. This is really in terms of what the mobility on the ice crystals in terms of temperature gradients, warm side to cool side. The cool side will be positive. So where do we find ice with a strong temperature gradient? So, and I answer the question here is freezing droplets. Okay, so when the droplets are freezing, you know, going from liquid to ice, there's a strong temperature gradient in that process. So the ice, you know, heated by an ice leak right here in the outside. We saw the videos before. Remember how you saw the ice freeze from one location? So it doesn't freeze the whole droplet at the same time. You know, if you have an ice leak right, it can hit the outside of the, if it's a, what's the type of ice leak right that impacts the outside? Contact, yeah. There you go. Contact ice nuclei. Cause it to start to freeze on the outside. You get this ice shell along this liquid warmer center. So you can get these temperature differences. And so that can result in differences in the charge. So it's very hard, I mean, to measure like these charges on the actual ice crystals. So the ice freezes. Remember, we had them bottles and stuff. You could freeze it, it expands, and you can cause splinters. And so you can get these splinters, these ice particles that can carry weighted charge upward in the updrafts. So splinter them, form particular ice crystals that can carry weighted charge. And then the liquid droplets can remain. But at least you have these ice particles that will take away the charge and rise. So that's one theory, is how you get these when you have the freezing droplets. There's a lot of other ones to get the electrification or electric fields in the clouds. But ice is required, and this is still an active area of research for doing this. So you got to get these charge separations, a strong electric field, and then you have to have this breakdown or this current that gets charged caused by the this charge separation so that we get lightning. And there's two main things that happen. There's a step later of lightning in the crowd, ionization channel of Erdikar. It's invisible or just faintly luminescence, branches out, and it's low current. So this is the first part. You know, you have this leader that goes from the negative to the positive in charged areas, for example, within the crowd. And then after you get the step reader, you can have a return stroke for the lightning. Connects these regions of operating charge. And so this is what's really visible. High current, cloud to ground. You can get currents of 20,000 amps. And in cloud, it's 2,000. So the amps is the flow of electricity, flow of charge. So that's what's really can hurt you. So voltage differences don't hurt you. It's the flow of the electricity that causes damage or stopping of that. A lot of times you stop that flow and it heats up areas. So these can have temperatures 50,000 degrees, high pressures. So this is quite the phenomenon for having these. Hottest place on Earth is in the lightning strike. Is that right? Can you think of any place hotter? Oh, and now we got a video here. Let me interrupt by going into since we got all these cool videos, I guess I gotta do this. Every time I do that, I got my page goes away. So how about a cool what a? And I think what I did here is I just the next one. Hi. Like this one just is a neat little search engine. So once you get through all my videos, you can go on here and I'll just make this big. This is just an advertisement, but they have a search engine for all types of cool graphics. And this is the one I like, is the lightning. They do a lot of these time-lapse videos. And they show a lot of different sunrises, storms, but so they have tons and tons of videos on this site, like these updrafts for the crowds, movement of the crowds, the convective. So you can really see the convective rolls. So a lot of lightning shots. Anybody try to take lightning pictures before? What's the secret to taking a lightning picture?
Video and screenshot.
Oh, video. I guess that works too.
Yeah,
so you always record it and you just keep it. Before you had these fancy video recorders in a camera, we used to have these cameras that you actually had to take pictures. Should have brought my lightning picture. The other way to do it is just do a very long time lapse. Yeah, just leave the shutter open and then close it once you see the lightning, right? Because you need it dark then, obviously. So we do that. Was there a question or did it?
No, I was going to say we had a long exposure to show.
Yeah, long exposures and post light exposure. I'm not sure which one that is, you know? I think that I like the, mantis here on the thunderstorm ammos with the downdrafts where you see the up down clouds. You see them out west a lot. These are the rising crowds you can see. But these ones you can see underneath the ammos that they kind of have this downward motion there. Then we already talked about the hail. And what a thing we talk about tomatoes. So lots of cool, and there's the another lightning one. So lots of cool things you can have now with the cameras. So they are all kinds of shots. If you put in I think you can search for all kinds of different lightning videos. And so they got TV ones. So I haven't seen this one, but see the crowd shots, ones from the lightning. And we slow it down. So, track to the metal and point objects. So, okay. So you can watch all types of videos there. Oh, so any questions? I mean, it's kind of a, not too well, but, you need to have charge separation, create electric field, ice is involved, and then you have to neutralize that charge by having a current go from the high to low, from the positive to negative or negative to positive. So each one of the flashes is one way or the other. And then you have flashes between the crowds or from the crowd to the ground. From the crowd to the ground, you have a higher current. So, and what's your chance of getting hit by lightning? Like 1 in 3 million or something? Huh?
Better than
winning the lottery, huh? Well, I guess both happen. So I took a nice little picture there that you can see, and I think we got hit on an aircraft 3 or 4 times when I've been flying. That's really funny when you have your hands on the throttle, the pilot does, and he feels the lightning or the electricity goes through the airplane, takes his hand off. But typically the airplanes are not damaged too much because they are conductive. So when you stop the flow, So more composite type of airplanes are more dangerous. Let's think about possible lightning modification methods that we can have. How can we change or modify this process? Decrease efficiency of charge mechanism, increase conductivity of the storm so you don't have so much of a distribution of the separation of the charges, block the triggering mechanism, discharge the clouds at a controlled rate. Okay, so you kind of need to have this mechanism because you have this voltage difference. So you can't stop it altogether, but you could control it and reduce it, at least in the one local area. So it's a global electrical phenomenon with the lightning, but the charge in this particular, the lightning in particular storm, we may suppress. So the idea that is most prominent in is increase the conductivity of storms and and then you have a discharge at a more controlled rate. So this conductivity is the flow of electrons, you know, don't get these big breakdowns, but have more of a controlled process. So modification of lightning experiments. So there was one research project Skyfire that was done to try to look at this, sponsored by the Forest Service in Montana in the late 60s, early 70s. So why would the Forest Service kind of be interested in lightning suppression? Yeah, forests, and they kill, starts forest fires, yeah. So someone can check this fact for me, but before we had all the cities and everything, that the reason you had the big prairies out to the west was because of the storms would burn all the trees. So that every prairie out in the prairies would burn like every 3 or 4 years. Seems an awful lot. But the trees would just not be able to survive because they wouldn't be able to grow big enough because of all the burning due to lightning. So now we cultivate, we suppress the fires. But just wonder how much smoke from them prairie fires was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago before we had a lot of farming and stuff. So someone should check that, am I right? Prairies have lots of fires naturally. So let's think a little bit deeper. I'll repeat this again. You know, why do these charges remain separate in the crowds? It's it attaches to the hydrogen media, to the ice, to the water droplets, and then they move relatively slowly. So they move less slowly than if they are just the ions. So that has to be a test question there in terms of, you know, big particles versus small ions, small H plus ion. An ion is anything that's charged, that has a net positive or negative charge. If the charges were not attracted, current would flow much more rapidly, and a charge would be neutralized. So, you know, more positive negative centers, you can neutralize the charges better, is kind of the theory. Oops, went the wrong way. So, you can get the plus and minus charges, and you can get this discharge between them when you get a high enough field. So, so how do you get free ions in the crowd? The idea is to add some point objects into the crowd. Should produce free ions and should reduce the amount of charge separation. So, more point objects to kind of reduce this this charge separation. Radar chaff, this conductive material that reflects well on the radar. You can put that in the crowds. We sometimes do this to look at areas that we can see on radars and trace them through the crowds. And the other one is ice crystals. So we come back to trying to increase ice crystals with AGI seeding is the idea for this. So the idea is to get more areas for the charge to occur, get more ice crystals in the crowds earlier, and that might affect the amount of lightning in the crowds. So, so they try to do this, use a variety of seeding techniques and quantities of AGI. They concluded the largest AGI was the most effective. So they did try a lot of different methods, and when you try different methods, you can't really get enough cases to statistically analyze them. So, so you get not very good statistical results. And so you get one of these field projects and put aside the fact that it's really not a great statistics. They had results that reduction in crowds to ground lightning of 66%, reduction in crowd to crowd lightning of 50%. And overall reductions of the discharge. So one case you had some positive results by seeding with the AGI to make more ice particles. But we are known as done anything since the 1970s. And there's no one I know of that's operationally doing something with ice, with lightning suppression. You basically get the fires and have to deal with them. And, you know, if you're concerned about the, you know, to stay inside, have something to discharge it for safety. So, a neat video here. But before I show you the video about triggering lightning, are there any questions? Yes.
So the method of getting free ions is like just seeding again, but is there different strategies of like where to seed or like?
You know, I don't think they tried different things in that experiment, and they don't really have a good case. You know, it's, again, if you could get the, you know, probably the same type of thing as the, you know, breaking of these water droplets, might make them separate more. If you get a lot of ice in there, so you don't have any water to carry a charge, I think they just said a whole bunch of, they got the best results with the most AGI. So just put the most in there that they could, but again, it's kind of one study that was done a long time ago and not really verified. So you could try to do that, but it's the same kind of technique of seeding with AGI to get more ice crystals.
So just regular seeding and kind of like as a byproduct, it's less like kind
of. Yeah, I think they would, you know, a lot of times in the normal, you know, for hail suppression or rain enhancement, you want to feed more of the feeder cells. I think this would be, you know, you have to get a little bit more into main updrafts and stuff. So, but people haven't really done a whole lot of research and validation of it. So there's not a huge interest, except for maybe now if we stop all the fires of West, although some of them are caused by power lines and other not natural issues. So another question.
You answered that question.
Yeah, okay. So any other questions that keep going on? I think it's really fascinating there's like a big electric circuit in the atmosphere that occurs with this charge moving around because of the cosmic rays that initiates the charges separation.
Okay, so when we were going through this, like we talked about how positive starts to go up in the cloud and the negative ends up going down, right?
Yeah, and usually there's a negative screening rayer on the outside of the clouds, you know, on the edges.
Yep.
And that's one reason, like when we fly our fuel mills on the aircraft, we need to get into the clouds to measure them, because otherwise you're just measuring the outside of the cloud. You don't know how much that electric field is in the actual cloud.
I have heard a couple theories about like the collision between water droplets and ice particles and how that can cause charge separation, how the ice will take the negative charge and go up and the water droplet will go down. Is that kind of more theoretical, or is that?
That's one of the theories and stuff. So there's a lot of different ones that are still largely under investigation. It's hard to know because it's hard to measure, you know, the individual charges.
Yeah.
And, you know, like if we measure, and then we have this problem too, like we measure the electric field right where the aircraft is, but we don't know, is that like a positive one above and negative below, or the opposite way, you know, in terms of, we get the signs of the electric fields, but you only get it at one point, you know, and then they can change around. So you really don't know what the charges are and the fields. And it's hard to measure them on the individual ice particles. We need an instrument. Yeah, we need an instrument that does that better. They have some, but they're not. And it's not a, you know, an active area of, I mean, there is some research in it, but it's not a very focused area for any one reason. So I think there's more hazards from like hurricanes or tornadoes are more exciting and stuff. And it's, but they do have, you know, we present and I do have some of our electric field work and stuff we've been talking with people, and now they have the new GO 16 satellite with a lightning detector on it, which looks at the flashes that you can get and count them. So they get some new instruments and new techniques. Other questions? All right, I was gonna try to get through this. and let's see here. Get, show you another trigger video. Rocket triggered lightning. Now this is one way they study it. I need to get that. That was in real time. Then they slow it down. Block it with a wire launch. So they have a small rocket that they attach to it with a wire. And the current could flow through the light, through the wire when it hits the rocket. And this is a case of an anonymous one where it doesn't follow the wire. You see the lightning coming back down. And a stroke of it. So University of Florida, people in Arizona do a lot of lightning research. Get all the advertisements. And that was from the American Geophysics Union meeting. So they usually have a section about lightning. Okay, let's see now if we can go to the other topic. We should have a few slides on for hurricanes. Hide that. Hurricane modification. So this is a big hurricane in Gulf of Mexico, Katrina. You see these nice from the satellite visible images from NOAA. You got the nice circular one. I've always wanted to do a hurricane project from North Dakota because you can predict pretty well when and where the hurricanes would be. And so you can't be, you gotta be close enough, but not too close. So we just wait here, and then we go down the day before. We want to fly in the hurricanes and get a airport that is going to be relatively close, but not impacted by it. So why base yourself in Florida or someplace else? I think North Dakota would be a great place to have an aircraft base. And there's interest, I was in a proposal once about flying the rain bands as they come on shore and stuff. The eyewall penetrations, uninteresting. So, but rain bands and the production of how that changes when they come on shore is one of the areas of study we could do. Just for no more creature, if you're in the Eastern Pacific, they call these typhoons. Tropical waves, so this is really tropical meteorology. Warm ocean waters, so typically you get the hurricanes once the oceans warm up during the summer. The energy comes from latent heat release or condensation. They are warm core storm systems. So your basic meteorology of the hurricanes. And I've never done much with hurricanes myself. So besides being interested in the rain formation and the rain bands. So here's a couple diagrams of the temperature and storm structure. So we have, again, you know, this understanding the storms before we can have a method to try to modify them. So let's see here. We have the distance, pressure is given here with the altitude. And this is a vertical cross section. And they put these in miles on this old diagram, center of the eye wall. I like the side view better in terms of these overshooting anvils, the flow into it. You got a circulation that you go around the storm. That's using an eye that's nice and calm. Then there's a wall of clouds, spiral bands. So spiral bands are kind of what I think of, the rain bands that are on the outside of it. And then the high level cirrus outflow area. So I think we have a couple radar images. You can see with the reds are the high refractivity areas. And these are the banded structures that usually rotate around, see the higher areas. And then you can see the cirrus, the high level clouds. Another radar loop. I think I have this one in. I'll do that. So this is the radar animation for that. So you can see the, if I can get rid of my, so it's refractivity values given with the color scale on the right. Reds and yellows are more refractivity, higher rain. And you can see it twirls around. And then the eye moves. So the and then they here's where we do our project report on Cape Kennedy. We don't make hurricanes, so I'm studying my cirrus clouds. So I think this is a faster sped up loop that shows passing Key West and going up Florida. So, boy, you can see the radar data for that. Oh, stop that. I want to get rid of you. All right, let's go back to my presentation. Here's the temperature, pressure, wind type of profile. So you have distance from the storm, you got the eye wall here, you got the pressure that falls. So a lot of times you look at the center pressure to measure the intensity of the hurricanes. And then you have the temperature that goes up till you get to the center, this warm core type of system, and then the wind speeds. So wind speed can be pretty high, even far away from it, but right outside the eye wall is when you get the highest winds, and it is calm right in the center. So, so lots of winds is the one of the key features and one of the damaging features of hurricanes. So you can see on the palm trees here, the big strong wind. But the other ones are the storm surge with the winds and the pressure changes that can have the water come into cities like New Orleans, lots of rain, and then the hurricanes can spawn tornadoes for this. So hurricane modification hypothesis. The primary release of latent heat is in the eye wall. If energy is released outside of the eye wall, less will be available to lower the pressure. So eye wall will expand and maximize, and maximum winds will decrease. So seed with greater genetic material, inspire rain band, release latent heat of fusion away from the eye wall. So you have a lot of latent heat released in these storms. So you want to spread that out is kind of the idea or the hypothesis for this. So how would you do this? Here's kind of a description of the hurricane that would be moving up in here. You got these rotating bands here. If you could get in this seeded area here to seed away from the eye wall and outside, you can maybe get more of the energy release far away from the storm to weaken it. So there was a project, Storm Fury, it's kind of famous for trying to do this in the 1960s. They actually seeded several hurricanes and possible results were noted. So this is one of the pictures showing the wind speed is on the y-axis here. So this is wind speed, and this is distance from the center. And then right here with the dark line is before seeding, and then this is 6 hours after seeding. So what you want to do is reduce the winds, because the winds are what gives you a lot of the damage, right? So if you could spread that out and reduce the winds would be the idea. And so they had a couple profiles from August 20th, 1969, probably way before all you were born. Couple of the problems was there's not really that much super cool water in the hurricanes. The other thing is you saw some of these decreases in the wind speed, but hurricanes naturally go through life cycle changes like those observed in the Cedar storm. So you do this for a couple of storms. You don't know if your changes were because of the seed in or because some other effects that were there. So again, it's hard to get enough statistics to know if it actually works. Other ways to do this, cool the ocean with some materials or iceberg. Let's get rid of that hot water down there. So basic hurricanes are just to transport heat from the tropics to the poles, because the earth is not heated the same. And hurricanes is one of the main mechanisms to get this excess heat transferred. Uh, retardation of circuit evaporation with very thin films. Change the radiation balance of the hurricane environment by absorption of sunlight with black carbon. You can put some carbon to change where it absorbs on sunlight. And then the wild idea is like growing it apart with a big hydrogen bomb. You know, lots of energy in the hurricane, so we need more energy. Remove water so that you don't have this condensation of this heat release from that. So issues with hurricane modifications, delivery of the seeding material, that's kind of hard. You know, these storms are big, far away from land. A lot of material is required. And then you got the idea of liability. You also have the idea that it's can be international. So what happens to Mexico if we do something and Mexico says we threw the hurricane towards them? Not a lot of cases to study. And you know, you can have some benefits of the rains from hurricanes. So that's it. And I will just see if I can pull up this one video on here, which I didn't have in here. So we can pull it up here. So we'll talk about the test and you can watch the videos. So what is for? Well, it's not pulling up. This is the one video I didn't try myself. I did it today. So we'll see you on Thursday. Talk about one of our foundation and the test.